Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. Scientists deem the current drought in the western states as a mega drought. That's because the extreme dry conditions have already lasted 2 decades and there's no end in sight. The U.S. Drought Monitor calls it the worst on record. Resulting constrictions on surface and groundwater are creating hardships for tribal agriculture and economics. Also, ecosystems and wildlife are impacted. Join us after the news as we discuss how tribes are faring during this severe drought.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Department of the Interior officials are making an announcement about the legacy of Indian boarding schools in the United States. Secretary Deb Haaland and Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs Brian Newland are addressing the National Congress of American Indians virtual mid-year conference Tuesday, where they'll discuss the schools. According to the agency, they'll announce steps the Interior Department will take to begin to reconcile the legacy of federal Indian boarding school policies, where Native children from across the country were sent to boarding schools focused on assimilation. The announcement follows Haaland's recent opinion on Indian boarding schools, where she shared her own family ties and the need for history about the schools to be brought to light, including acknowledging the trauma and impacts on students, families, and tribes. Haaland's opinion came after the grim discovery in Canada in May of the remains of 215 children on the site of a former residential school in British Columbia. The discovery opened old wounds for First Nations people in Canada and was also a reminder for Native people in the U.S. about the legacy of boarding school. The National Congress of American Indians Mid-Year Gathering is highlighting the Alaska region. It kicked off Sunday and is focusing on a number of key issues facing Alaska Native and American Indian communities across the U.S. Federal recognition, technology, violence against women, and substance abuse were among task force updates Monday. Tuesday's schedule includes Alaska Native speakers, Alaska's congressional delegation will deliver remarks, Department of Transportation updates, the Interior Department announcement, and attendees will wrap up the day with caucus and subcommittee meetings. A packed virtual agenda is set for the conference, which ends Thursday. The Canadian Senate has passed Bill C-15. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, it lines up Canadian law with the United Nations Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples.
The UN Declaration was adopted in 2007. In Canada, the new bill does not directly implement the Declaration's various articles into Canadian law. Instead, it establishes a guide for their implementation and spells out how Ottawa must take measures to ensure that Canada's laws are consistent with the Declaration and prepare a plan to achieve the objectives of the Declaration. It's being described as a milestone in Canada on the path toward reconciliation. David Lametti is Canada's Justice Minister.
We have to address the legacy of injustices, including systemic racism and discrimination, that continue to hold back Indigenous peoples across Canada.
Lametti says he believes the passage of Bill C-15 is a sign of progress and a reason to be optimistic. Perry Bellegarde is the National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations. He says aligning Canada's laws with the Declaration is a huge piece, and it also calls for a national action plan to end racism and discrimination.
This national action plan has to be done in partnership and collaboration, communication with First Nations peoples. That's very key. And so we've got 2 years for the federal government, the Crown, to get this done in partnership with our people. So there is a process and a plan in place, and it really is indeed a roadmap to reconciliation.
Support for the bill from Native leaders has been widespread, but many are cautious, and some have raised questions about the consultation process before the bill was tabled. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The motorcycle group Wisconsin Indigenous Riders is raising awareness of missing and murdered Indigenous people. The group's hosting a ride through tribal nations in Wisconsin. They're starting at the Ho-Chunk Nation Friday, traveling through a number of tribal communities before ending Saturday at Lac du Flambeau. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
This reminder to get your COVID-19 vaccination is provided by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, who support this show. Info at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus. As COVID-19 vaccines are becoming available, you can learn who's eligible, when, where, and how to get it, and what you might want to discuss with your doctor at aarp.org/vaccineinfo. AARP supports this program.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, coming to you live from my homelands, Osheruwutui. Water levels in Hoover Dam's Lake Mead in Nevada are at the lowest point since the reservoir was first built. Lakes and rivers across the West are well below normal because of prolonged drought and record-breaking high temperatures. The conditions are affecting agriculture, threatening wildlife, and setting the stage for a severe wildfire season. Many scientists say climate change is the main factor for the conditions that some experts are calling a mega drought. In California and Oregon, the federal government is restricting water in the Klamath River Basin for everyone, including tribes. Water flows there are important to keep endangered salmon alive. For the rest of the hour, we're talking about how the widespread drought is affecting tribes today. And you can join our conversation too. How is drought changing the land around you? How is it affecting tribal agriculture and the economy? Join us by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And joining us today from Klamath, California, is Barry McCovey Jr. He is the Yurok Tribal Fisheries Department Director and a Yurok Tribal member. Our pleasure to have him here with us. Welcome to Native America Calling, Barry.
Well, Cloud, Tara, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
Well, Barry, tell us about what you are witnessing, what your tribe is seeing. Tell me a little bit about how drought is affecting the Klamath River and how it's been over years.
Yeah, thank you. So, you know, drought is a natural phenomenon, and we've always had droughts, and there's always been dry years and wet years. But I think what's different about this current climate regime that we're in, this mega drought, is it's been prolonged. So, you know, we started seeing this in 2014 and 2015, and since then we haven't really had a lot of wet or good years where we had a lot of precipitation and snowpack, maybe just a couple, but for the most part it's been dry. And so when you start to get these prolonged droughts, the river and the river ecosystem and everything connected to the river really starts to suffer. And what we're seeing is, you know, this is kind of becoming the new normal. And we believe it's, you know, a product of global climate change. And, you know, it was predicted that prolonged drought would be a product of climate change. Unfortunately, it happened faster than we were expecting. And so it's upon us now. And this is probably the new normal. And so what we're seeing is impacts in the river ecosystem, you know, low flows. There's not enough water. As you mentioned in the introduction, there's not enough water to go around in the basin to satisfy all the needs of agriculture, the needs of the endangered species in Upper Klamath Lake, and the needs of the endangered species and all the fish in the Klamath River. And so this year, you know, flows are curtailed. We didn't get what we call a flushing flow. It's a short-term high volume release of water that we try to get every spring to help knock down a disease that we have here in the Klamath River called Serrata Nova Shasta. And this year there wasn't enough water for us to get that flow event. And so the disease was able to take hold, and it's ravaging the juvenile Chinook salmon as they migrate from the spawning grounds out to the ocean. We're losing a very large proportion of those fish that are out migrating, probably, you know, upwards of 60-70% of the fish that we're capturing in our trapping devices here on the Yurok Reservation on the lower Klamath River 60 to 70% of those fish are deceased from this disease, Serrata nova shasta. And like I just mentioned, generally we're able to kind of keep that disease somewhat abated through these flow releases. And this year we weren't able to do that. And so we're seeing this devastating fish kill ongoing. And, you know, it's we see it as a sign of bad things, and the ecosystem is out of balance, and it's been out of balance for a long time, but it seems now more than ever that unbalanced nature of this Klamath Basin is really showing itself with climate change and with extreme drought. We're mm-hmm. terrified what the future holds, and you know, these fish that are dying right now, these baby salmon that are dying on their way out to the ocean, they aren't going to return in 3 years, 2, 3, or 4 years, as the salmon life cycle goes. They go to the ocean and become adults and then return to their spawning grounds. They're not going to return, and those are the fish that feed our people. And those are the fish that are part of our economy, and not just the tribe's economy, but the entire region. And so, you know, this is a disaster, and there's no relief in sight.
And Barry, when you think of the ecosystem, your nation is a part of it too, as you just stated. How important the salmon is to feeding and even carrying on culture. And so, Barry, anything more you would like to share of how culture is being shaken with all of this?
Sure. Thank you for that question. Yeah. You know, we're the Yurok people and the people of the Klamath Basin, all the tribes are. Our lives are intertwined with the river completely and holistically, and we've evolved with the river. It's like the air we breathe. And so when we see our river hurting, you can see it reflected in the people. The people are hurting too. Salmon are an extremely important food source for tribal people here in the basin. We all know the health benefits of salmon and how important they are. Unfortunately, these last 5, 6, 7 years, the Yurok tribe hasn't been able to catch enough salmon to feed our people. So we need a certain amount of fish to feed the tribal membership every year, and we haven't really come close to being able to harvest that many fish. There just aren't enough fish to feed the people anymore, and that's disastrous on many levels. You know, just health wise. But, you know, fishing is a culture, right? And so when we go to fish and harvest, you know, we teach our younger generation. It's about making those connections. And there's so much that goes into harvesting the fish, all the preparation and all the knowledge that's gained from elders. And then, you know, it's the catching the fish and eating the fish is the top of the pyramid. And there's so much below that goes into that act. And then giving the fish away to elders and feeding the people that need it is an extremely important part of who we are as Yurok people. And you know, to not be able to do that really hurts. And then I would also add from a cultural perspective, you know, this drought has also caused these algae blooms in the river, this toxic blue-green algae. And when that occurs, the river is literally toxic. And there's public health warnings for people not to enter the river. You can become ill. If your dog drinks the water, your dog will die. So part of our culture, some of our ceremonies require that people bathe in the river. You know, cultural bearers need to enter the river. It's so much a part of who we are. And when you can't enter the river because it's toxic and you might get sick, it starts to infringe upon your religious freedom. And that's, we take that very seriously. And so the ramifications of drought and of a fractured ecosystem that we have here in the Klamath are far ranging and are specifically deleterious to tribal people here in the basin.
And so we are hearing a little bit about what's going on in Yurok, how drought is affecting their community. Maybe you're a tribal member and you have some thoughts about any of this. Or if you are relating to it, you're from another nation and you see how heavy the drought is affecting your community, your culture. If there's anything you want to add, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Barry, thinking of how it's affecting community members, what about other surrounding animals? Are they also being affected by some of this? Even the ones who also eat the salmon too?
Yes, definitely. So the Klamath River itself, you know, is the lifeblood of the entire region. And so when the Klamath suffers, everything's going to suffer. So, you know, everything from the algae, you know, the algae that grows is going to grow more vigorously. So that's going to take oxygen out of the water. There's so many effects from low flows and water that's too warm. So when the water's too low, it gets warm really fast, and that has a bunch of negative impacts on animals. You know, the bugs that live in the river are hurting. Those feed salmon. Salmon are a keystone species. They feed so many other animals in the ecosystem and move themselves on up the food chain. And it's not just here in the Klamath Basin, right? So there's, you know, endangered orcas out in the Pacific Ocean feed on salmon. And when salmon aren't making it to adulthood and migrating out in the ocean, that's hurting orcas out in the ocean. And I'm sure when orcas start suffering, that's going to have a cascading effect throughout everything that they're connected to. And so, this disaster here on the Klamath is far-reaching and is affecting many different aspects of the natural world.
Well, there you have it, hearing more about how all of this affects another part of life. Any thoughts? Give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. When we get back, we'll take your calls. We're looking forward to adding you to the conversation. Again, our number is 1-800-996-2848. And when we hear about drought, do you ever think of our tribal nations and just how much it's affecting the economy and culture? I'll throw that out there again because I know you have some thoughts and comments on this. Now is the time to dial in. Go ahead and give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. We'll hear about more work that's being done to understand exactly how the drought is affecting our tribal nations. And at any time, if you have any questions, we sure hope you'll dial in. You can join us. 1-800-996-2848 is a number. We're going to pause here to tell you a little bit about what is coming up tomorrow here on our Talking Circle, but we will keep the phone lines open. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. How much is drought affecting your community? And what would you like to say about what causes drought? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Go ahead and dial in. The first ever International Indigenous Hip Hop Awards honored more than a dozen artists. The recognition comes as Native musicians are gaining broader acclaim for their work. We'll talk with some of the winners and sample some of their music. That's on the next Native America Calling.
Support by Roswell Park, who know tribal communities face persistent challenges in health equity, such as cancer and higher death rates. The Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center is dedicated to advancing cancer research that will lead to translatable science, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous populations worldwide. Are you at high risk for cancer? A no-charge online assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and we are talking about drought in the western United States today. How has it affected your Native community? Join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And we are hearing from Klamath, California. We have Barry McCovey Jr. on the line, and he is the Yurok Tribal Fisheries Department Director and a Yurok Tribal member. And so, Barry, after hearing where things are, the effects, what is being done to turn things around? Are there solutions? Do you have to take a short approach to this? And what are some of the long-term plans?
Yeah, so it's a really complex issue. The Klamath Basin has many different interests involved, and so the solution isn't an easy one, and it's complex, and it's going to take creativity. I think I think in order to get to a long-term solution, we need to work with our neighbors in the basin, with agricultural interests, and with other tribes, so that we can kind of all get on the same page and work together to try and find solutions that work for the greater good for the basin, you know, for the ecosystem. And our perspective, you know, is we're trying to restore balance, and we're trying to fix the world. And so that's how we go about everything we do. And so when we're looking at solutions to try and solve this crisis here in the Klamath Basin, that's the perspective that we're coming from. And so, you know, as far as short-term solutions go, short-term solutions, I don't think is something that we're trying to pursue, because we'll just have to go through that process again and again and again. And we want to try to find long-term solutions that work well for many generations to come. We're worried about our children and their children's children, and et cetera. We want them to have a healthy ecosystem to live in. And as far as short-term things that we are pursuing, we're trying to get help to mitigate some of the negative impacts of drought and of water diversion, and things that are harming the ecosystem. And it's not just the river, right, that's being affected by this drought. There are many aspects of tribal life, Yurok life, that are being impacted. So, you know, we're in a lot of our reservation and our homelands, our Aboriginal territory, is in areas of really high wildfire danger. So we're trying to get out in front of that. You know, we have fears that some of our water systems that provide drinking water to communities could go dry this year. So there's a lot of issues that we're facing here in Yurok country that we're trying to get help with. And so that's the short-term solution, is to try and mitigate some of that while we can. As far as fixing the river, we're looking more towards a long-term solution.
And Barry, we had a caller who called in who simply just asked, what can we do to, as individuals, to deal with the drought situation? Any advice?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we can always try and reduce our own footprint, right? We can always try and help with the. I mean, we believe, and I think science is on the same page, and believe that these mega droughts are caused by climate change. And so, if we can all do our part, if we all do our part, and we all try to make a difference as far as our carbon footprint and making ecosystem friendly choices with the things we buy and things like that, I think that's a good first step. You know, if we're taking care of our own home and our own backyard, that's one thing that we can do. We can't force everyone to do that, and we can't force obviously other nations to get on board, but if we can take care of what we're responsible for, and then, you know, you can get involved. You know, you can track these things and look at from a perspective of a tribal person and what we're experiencing. Try to understand where we're coming from. Maybe do some research on the subject and understand the history of how things happened here in the basin and why we're in this predicament. And then, you know, you can reach out to elected officials and try and get your voice heard.
Thank you for that. And if you have anything for Barry, dial in now, 1-800-996-2848. Right now, we're going to go to Logan, Utah. And with us today is Dr. Kinda Curtis, and she is a professor of agricultural business in the Department of Applied Economics at Utah State University. Welcome to Native America Calling, Dr. Curtis. And I know you go by Kinda. So, Kinda, thanks for being here, and welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Tara. Thanks so much for having me.
And so, Kinda, tell us some of your observations on what you are seeing the drought do to tribal agriculture.
Yeah, okay. So I've been on a USDA-funded project called Native Waters on Arid Lands for the last 5 years.
And the focus of the project, it's a multi-state, multi-institution, including land grants and tribal college faculty, extension faculty, on trying to develop tools for climate resilience for Southwest tribal communities. So it's an expansive project. As an economist on the project, I've been really trying to look at the economic impacts of droughts on the tribes and ways that we can maintain agriculture and kind of get an idea of where, how we can move forward to maintain that as an important, both economic but also historical and traditional part of many of the tribes today. So one in particular, we were looking at how basically two-year droughts have affected cattle production, hay production on tribes and reservations in Nevada, Utah, Arizona, and New Mexico. And so we're looking at moderate droughts. So basically, you know, if you look at the Palmer Drought Index, which goes from like -4 to +4, if we went from 0, which is essentially like normal conditions, to -2 for 2 years, we're seeing, you know, pretty substantial impact to cattle and hay production on many reservations. And so what we did in the study was to look at both the direct impacts, and so how specifically cattle operations and hay operations on the reservations are impacted in terms of dollars, and then also look at the total economic impacts. And so when you have an industry or an operation that changes, you know, there's other impacts to, you know, suppliers, you know, feed suppliers. There's changes, impacts to the number of jobs. And so that's what we call the total impacts. We look at everything in the economy. And just to give you an example, we saw for all of the reservations that we looked at, approximately 20 within that four-state area, you know, when we had this two-year moderate drought, you know, cattle numbers were decreased by, you know, 3.7%, which led to quite a bit of impact on some of the tribes. For example, just for Navajo Nation within the New Mexico area was a $2.8 million reduction there in the economy. If you look at Navajo Nation in just in Arizona, we see a $5.3 million impact for changes just in cattle. What was interesting is that the impact on the hay industry actually only lasted for 1 year, and then things would go back. But with the cattle, it had a long-lasting impact of several years. And that makes sense. I mean, when people sell off cattle or have to buy hay feed, it takes a long time to regenerate that cattle operation, and you can't just bounce back easily within the next year. So that's just some things we're looking at with this particular study. And, you know, the hay numbers, because it's not quite as large of operations or importance to the agricultural economies on the reservations, you know, we saw numbers, you know, in the $500,000, you know, down to about even 50,000, that type of thing. So not quite as a dramatic impact as it was with cattle production, but just kind of trying to get an idea. I mean, we were looking at basically data from 1981 to 2016. So that doesn't take into consideration the last couple of years because a lot of that data isn't available yet. We're using USDA NAS data and precipitation data and those types of things. And so that was, you know, one of the things that we looked at. We're trying to really trying to get an impact on, you know, what the drought will have on the economies on the reservations. Another thing that we're looking at is trying to look at alternative crops, and many of them actually are traditional crops, and that do withstand times of climate change and specifically drought, and how those can be effectively produced and for a viable economy. And also looking at food and agritourism is another very viable option. So, some things that we're looking at from the economy standpoint on the project. We also have climatologists, social scientists, water ecologists who are looking at many other different aspects of the situation, and all of that type of thing is actually on the Native Waters and Earthlands website. So I would encourage folks to take a look at that particular website to see all that's involved. And anyway, thank you.
Sure. And, you know, this really hits home. Yesterday I was talking with an elder in my community and just talking about that direct impact on cattle and just how much our ranchers have had to adjust and how they're facing things. Ranchers, I know you're out there too. If there's anything you'd like to add, how the drought is affecting what you do, we sure hope you'll dial in too. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Kinda, has there been any kind of relief that you know of that is coming to some of these folks who are facing hardships?
Yeah, well, I'm aware of, especially within some of the COVID funding coming from various government agencies and also some of the cattle associations and also through cooperative extension states, they've been especially trying to make efforts to provide additional feed, because that's the main thing with drought. You know, it affects the rangeland, it affects the amount of feed available. You know, things just don't grow, or the fire comes through and takes out the available feed. And so I was on a project which was funded by the Native Agricultural Trust, and basically we provided feed for cattle producers, well, any livestock producer, you know, in the Utah portion of Navajo Nation, approximately $60,000 that went to producers in that area in terms of hay, grain, and other resources just to try to sustain them through the drought last summer. And so I know there's been other programs. I know the Utah Farm Bureau has also been providing feed and other resources to producers in Utah. I don't have a lot of information on what's going on in other states, but I know there is programs that are trying to alleviate that, at least in the short term.
And so, Kinda, with all of this and thinking about, you know, what you have witnessed through the numbers and just predicting if these numbers continue at the rate they are, what could that mean for the future?
Well, you know, I hate to forecast into the future too much, but I think that, you know, coming up with intuitive and new ways of doing things is obviously going to be a must. But I think that, you know, Native American culture has existed, you know, for millions of years, and a lot of, you know, some of the things that they used to traditionally grow and traditionally use, I think, are things that should be reconsidered. I know. So I work with a cooperative extension agent in Southern Utah. Her name's Reagan Witsalusi. We're working on a project to try to bring back some of the traditional fruits and vegetables. She did a long project looking at Navajo peach production. Again, I think that just coming up with innovative ways to maintain agriculture but do things a little differently. And that's, you know, we're looking at types of things that can be grown, you know, in with, you know, that one of the things about climate change is also increases pest events. And so that obviously impacts ag a lot. And so there's a lot of different moving parts. Drought isn't the only one, but coming up with innovative ways to kind of deal with the overarching effects of climate change. One thing that I'm especially have worked on over the years is looking at ag and food tourism. There is a growing emphasis in the world and even in the United States on that, and the tribes have a lot to offer in terms of traditional cooking, traditional types of foods, and people are willing to come and take cooking classes and try those foods and make those experiences. And that seems kind of maybe far away from ag, but it's a way to sustain ag within the community, but just in a slightly different way than maybe thought of within the last 20, 30, 40 years, you know, focusing on maybe more commodity crops like hay and alfalfa, but to maybe move back to more traditional ways of doing things.
What do you think about that as a solution? Give us a ring right now. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Kinda, a couple of minutes before the break, just what are some of the positive things that people are doing to push back
against climate change? Or
and what you're seeing with the economic impact?
Okay. I'm somewhat familiar with some of the things that are going on with tribal producers in Nevada. We've seen movement towards, you know, things like TEF, which is a grain used for gluten-free bread. And it uses, you know, basically a quarter of the water that alfalfa production does. And it has very similar types of, you know, things that you need in the production cycle. And so you don't really have to change things that much. But so I'm seeing people moving to these alternative crops, which have a great market, but also use a lot less water and then can be combined with the current things they're doing on a farm and ranch. So that's just one example. People moving out of perennial crops where, you know, your investment is 2 to 3, 4 years down the road before you get that back. And alfalfa is a perennial crop. And so if you don't know, I know we've experienced, you know, incidences of way too much water at the wrong time and not enough water when needed. And so moving into annuals and things like that, that can be produced with the, you know, without having to worry about the long-term impacts, just worrying about the next few months instead of years from now and how that might change the investment that's been made in an alfalfa field, for example. So we're seeing those types of things. We're also seeing, of course, investment in water infrastructure and those types of things to try to reduce water usage. So moving, say, from flood to, you know, other types of things like overhead or to drip, those types of things. And anyway, moving to more higher value crops, fruits, vegetables, those types of things. So there's mm-hmm. different things going on in different places.
And maybe they're going on right in your own backyard, in your field. If you want to tell us about it, give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. And what about our landscape? How much is drought changing it? If you're a farmer or rancher, we do want to hear from you, and how is drought affecting your livelihood? Give us a ring. What about big bodies of water your tribe depends on? What have been some of the effects of drought? Has it affected that big body of water? Tell us about it. 1-800-996-2848 is a number, and maybe you are working in a department that works and addresses all of these issues. We'd like to hear from you. Give us the perspective from your nation. Phone lines are open. Go ahead, give us a ring.
Support by Amerind, Indian Country's 100% tribally owned insurance partner. Amerind works with tribal governments and their business enterprises to provide effective commercial insurance coverage, strengthen Native American communities, protect tribal sovereignty, and help keep dollars in Indian Country. More information on property, liability, workers' compensation, and commercial auto solutions at Amerind.com. That's AMERIND.com.
Thank you for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, and we're focused on drought today. There is still time to join our conversation. How has it affected your state? Has it changed your landscape? What about its effect on wildlife? What about its effect on agriculture? Give us a ring right now. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We're going to go to Fort Berthold, North Dakota, to say hello to Joletta, who is joining us today in the KMHA listening community. Joletta, thank you for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Hi, good afternoon.
Hello.
Thank you for taking my call. You know, one of the solutions, you were talking about solutions, and one of the solutions I use as a tribal member of the Mandan and Hidatsa is I make public comment to any time there's a change in regulatory regulations, whether it's has to do with oil and gas or clean air or clean water. And I think that's very, very crucial and critical that that I do that as a Native person, as an Indigenous person to this land. You know, to raise issues that have to do with cultural identity and spiritual connection to the land, we're the ones who are going to make that voice. And so that's why it's so important when decisions are being made that that's a part of that decision factor, especially for tribal people whose land has been protected by treaties offered by the United States government. I think that the condition of our lands, you know, the air and the water and the soil, that should be protected by those treaties that were signed in good faith. When those treaties were signed, our air was clean, our water was pure, our land was very fertile. Things have changed dramatically, And those were man-made changes. And so regulations guide those man-made decisions. And so it becomes real important for people such as myself and others who can do that is to participate in public comment, because public comment becomes a part of that record and a part of that decision making.
Getting involved. Well, thank you for that advice, Joletta. Thank you for your call there in Fort Berthold. Tuned in on KMHA. Join us too at 1-800-996-2848. Let's take another call. We got Joe in Klamath, California. Thank you for giving a ring. Go ahead. You're on air.
Hello, Barry. I wanted to ask you, you mentioned some of the long-term solutions that the Yurok tribe is doing. I was hoping maybe you could talk about dam decommissioning and maybe some of the other lands things that the Yurok tribe is doing with cultural burning and other stuff. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for reaching out, Joe. With us today out of Klamath, California, is Barry McCovey Jr. With the Yurok Tribal Fisheries Department Director. Also here, too, is Dr. Kinda Curtis, a professor of agricultural business in the Department of Applied Economics at Utah State University. Thank you both. And Barry, go ahead, give Joe some info.
Hey, thanks, Joe. Appreciate the question. Yeah, so in addition to the long-term solutions that I mentioned earlier regarding agricultural interests in the Upper Basin and other tribes, the Yurok tribe has been working tirelessly for many decades to build climate resiliency and to get out ahead of this and try and restore and bring back the Klamath River. And so one of the most ambitious projects that we've undertaken and probably that's ever been undertaken as far as river restoration goes is the removal of four dams here on the Klamath River. And that is soon going to be a reality because of the efforts of the tribes and others involved. We now have a plan in place to have those dams removed in 2023. So, you know, there are some positive aspects of the situation that we're in. We have an amazing tribe, an amazing tribal government, and amazing departments, and an amazing natural resources division, and we all work really hard at restoring balance. Joe mentioned, you know, some of the other stuff that we do. We're trying to bring back fire. Fire was a major component of our management of the land here in our Aboriginal territory. You know, we constantly are monitoring water quality on the reservation and off the reservation, making sure that we have a record of what's happening to the river. We have large scale restoration projects outside of dam removal that we have ongoing in the lower Klamath on the reservation, but also upstream off the reservation near the spawning grounds where the salmon return to. We have numerous large-scale river restoration projects every year that we undertake to try and restore balance to this basin. And so we are as proactive as you can be here on the river. And we're going to continue that fight. That's all we know how to do.
Thank you for that. And you know what, Joe? Thank you for calling in. You can dial in, too, at 1-800-996-2848. And right now we go to Dulce, New Mexico. With us on the line is Daryl Vigil. He's a water administrator for the Jicarilla Apache Nation and also a co-facilitator of the Water and Tribes Initiative. And he is Jicarilla Apache. And he's also Jemez and Zia Pueblo. Our pleasure to have him here. Welcome to Native America Calling, Daryl.
Thank you, Tara. Danjo, Goetze, Hopa.
Thank you for that. And Daryl, sometimes taking action is the way to push back against some of this and even positioning your tribe in a place or even demanding. We need to be at this table, even though we weren't invited. This all goes into this and talking about how water affects our communities. And when drought is there and it's taken away water resources, even more so to be involved. And I say all that because I understand that's some of the work that you do. Tell me more. Any thoughts on your tribe's or your nation's work to push back on some of this and make sure access to water is happening, and especially during a drought?
Sure. Thank you, Tara. Thank you, Native American Calling. And thanks, Barry, and thanks, Kenda. I learned a whole lot. I really appreciate, you know, you being on the call with me, I'm honored to be on the call with you today also. We're right in the middle of what's the renegotiation of the operational guidelines for the Colorado River. And the reason that's significant to my tribe is because our settlement rights that we settled in 1992 are all with water delivered from the Colorado River or a tributary of the Colorado River. And so our particular settlement that delivers water to two different reservoirs within the state of New Mexico, Navajo Dam and Heron Dam. And so we're at a situation in this moment in time where we really have an ability to maybe forward a transformation of the so-called law of the river as it exists. And just kind of give the background to callers about, you know, why this is, you know, and Barry mentioned this. It's a very, very complex situation in the Colorado River Basin as well, where you have a situation where you have 30 tribal sovereigns in the basin, 7 basin states that are involved with this, the federal government and the country of Mexico. The basin is divided into upper and lower basins. Each of those 30 tribal sovereigns has unique settlements and decrees unique to their individual tribe. And there's been over the last 100 years, next year will be the celebration of the, I don't know if it's a celebration, but the anniversary of the Colorado River Compact, which apportioned the river as it still remains today, 100 years later. And so for my tribe, given that, you know, our water is delivered that far off reservation, and we have a distinct ability inside of our settlement to be able to lease that water or to market that water, and our ability to move that water anywhere else outside state boundaries is not allowed by the current law of the river. And which is just a mishmash of things that have developed and more from precedent than anything else over the last 100 years. And so my tribe has been actively involved at the higher level policy negotiations because, you know, if that policy doesn't change at that real high level in terms of an engagement with the 7 basin states and the federal government, you know, then we're left, you know, having, you know, settlement water that we're not even able to use. And that ends up flowing down the river for free. And there's a number of tribes before the drought contingency planning in the Colorado River Basin. It was estimated there was at least a million acre feet of unused tribal entitlement in the upper and lower basins of the Colorado River. So water that's tribal water that's just flowing down the river for free because of the law of the river, state law, and those kind of things, tribes are not able to develop those water rights. And so we're at a real pivotal time, you know, given the nature of this new administration and kind of the appetite that's driven by, you know, the drought and climate change and the understanding now. I think there's a lot of, you know, putting your head in the sand for a long time about the realities of what was coming. You know, the fact that, you know, we were, as been mentioned before, we're 18 to 20 years into this current cycle of drought. And folks like Brad Udall, who's, you know, a renowned climatologist, they estimate that this is probably going to last for the next 100 years or so. So it becomes real pivotal that if we have the ability to create change in the basin, it absolutely needs to include tribal water. Tribes in the basin hold water rights to 3.4 million acre feet of water rights, which comprises at least 25% of the volume of the Colorado River. And that percentage is increasing because of climate change and global warming, because of the demand on the river. And we're already at a place where we have a supply-demand imbalance and what they call a structural deficit in terms of upper basin's ability to maybe deliver water to the lower basin. And where have tribes been in all this mix? Excluded. You know, we have not had any inclusion over the last really 100 years. The last major source piece of policymaking was in 07 with the creation of the operational guidelines for the Colorado River. And tribes were not included in that process. And then that followed up with the 2012 Basin Study, which was a partnership between the seven basin states and the federal government to look at, you know, the hydrology and study the Colorado River. Tribes were not invited to participate in that at all. So tribes really rallied around that particular exclusion because tribes were gaining capacity over this period of time to know that, you know, the future didn't look very bright in terms of our ability to engage in our sovereignty and self-determination in terms of how we wanted to develop our water rights. So we have a situation right now. You know, I wanted to provide that background because it is very complicated, and it involves a whole lot of players. And how it comes back to my tribe is that, you know, if we have a settlement and we're not able to utilize that water, you know, it defeats the whole purpose of the settlement. You know, in terms of winter's rights, in terms of those language, like, you know, for purposes of the reservation, and so. You know, it becomes really important to us, you know, to be at that policy table, but also understand there's the connection to what happens locally. And, you know, our water locally is provided by the Navajo River. And the Navajo River is a tributary of the Colorado River. And right through the San Juan Chama project that was built in the 60s, there's nearly 100,000 acre feet of diverted water through the San Juan Chama project water, which includes the Navajo River, into the Rio Grande Basin, and actually the city of Albuquerque, that's where the city of Albuquerque gets its water from the San Juan Chama diversion, which is, you know, Colorado River water. So, you know, when we think about drought, you know, and there's going to be more demand on that little tiny river that we get our municipal system from. The good thing is that, you know, usually, and our rights are senior rights in terms of our historic rights, you know, we'll probably be protected from a whole lot of that. But, you know, we've had situations where the river has gotten really, really low. And so, you know, absolutely impacts that. And as been mentioned before, you know, we're hunter-gatherers. And so it absolutely affects, you know, everything that we do, you know, on our reservation, you know, in terms of hunting and ranching and the abilities for ranchers. You know, we talked a little bit, Kenda talked a little bit about economies and those kind of things, but absolutely impacts that. And then the impacts to the lakes that we have, you know, which could be absolutely storage impoundments as well for our settlement water that are drying up because of, you know, lack of low snowpack and low runoff and those kind of things. So, and the other impact that's been mentioned too, you know, is, you know, culturally, you know, we have to plants that we use in healing ceremonies here. Traditionally, you know, they're hard to find here anymore. So we have to go to other places, somewhere places where we have to ask permission to go to actually get those plants so that we can, you know, do our ceremonies. So, you know, climate change, you know, and we're right in the middle of this whole policy discussion in terms of the opportunity to actually start to hopefully have this administration fulfill on some of the things it said in terms sure. of fulfilling on sure. trust responsibility in terms of providing that seat at the table that it has never done before. And given the nature of that, I think that's one of the biggest asks that the collective sovereigns are having is that, you know, we need a place to engage in the process.
Well, thank you for that. And thank you for pulling all that together for us, too. Thank you for being here with us, Daryl V. Hill. And we got to wrap things up. Also, thank you to Dr. Kenda Curtis and also Barry McCovey Jr. You heard different perspectives on some of this, and we know there are things that are affecting people's communities. If you want to tell us about it, you can always reach out, comments@nativeamericacalling.com. And tomorrow, we are inviting you back for a recap of the first ever International Indigenous Hip Hop Awards. Thank you for tuning in today. More information about our program can be found on our website, nativeamericacalling.com. That's also where you find an archive of today's program. If you wanted to share it with a friend, maybe even go back, hear some of those comments once more, you can find it right here on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. I'm Tara Gatewood. We'll meet you here tomorrow.
Support by Western Governors University, an online university for working adults and underserved populations. At WGU, students apply what they already know, learn at their own pace, and graduate sooner with little or no debt. With bachelor's and master's degree programs in four fields, business, IT, teaching, and health professions, including nursing. Information and application at wgu.edu/degrees.
Hamitaki piki, oyate ota honip chapelo. Wo iwayan ke kahina zania oti elshnayayo. Lakhozani wa okia oti ektayayo. Healthcare.gov elyayo nistel mas abhayo. 1-800-318-2596. Le wot khaniki, Medicare to Medicaid otieta, hiyapelo. Ho, hechetuelo.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.